All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we got a packed show today, so I'm just going to rush right through this. At the back end of the show, it's going to be a very special. I'm really looking forward to this. We're going to be talking with filmmaker Robert Greene about his new film, Bisbee 17, and it's a mind blower. It's a very important film, and he's going to be in studio to talk with us about it. Before that, we'll be talking with Sansara Taylor, writer for Revcom.us, Revolution newspaper, and co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, about what's going on right now with all the stuff that's happening in terms of Brett Kavanaugh, the oppression of women, the need to actually get rid of this entire system, the need to get the fight against this whole system of fascism that has been implemented and seriously implemented. So looking forward to that one, as always. And opening the show up, I'm really pleased to be welcoming back to the show Michelle Chai and Perry Hoberman. And they are two people who have been, it's very interesting. They're part of, over the last 2 years, actually, 11 members of Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club, you know, both groups, people were members of one or the other, or some both, in L.A., and are facing various criminal charges for taking part in and or supporting nonviolent civil disobedience and political protests that took place from September 2017 through March 2018. And I know all you folks out there listening about that are pretty, you're pretty favorable towards, you look pretty favorably towards nonviolent political protests, civil disobedience. Well, people were arrested for holding banners across freeways, all the way through all kinds of things, up to the campus protests at UCLA, including disrupting an appearance by that sneaky little rat, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. And really, look at him, he is a rat, okay? The protests were sounding the alarm about the Trump-Pence regime and the need to drive these Nazis from power. And so to talk about that, I'm really pleased to welcome to the show Michelle Chai. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You got to get your mouth up on that.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go. Now we're doing good. And Perry Hoberman. Perry, welcome back.
Thanks, Michael.
Great to be here. Well, let's jump into this right away because I want to get as much out of it as we can, all right? What is the situation today? Let me ask Michelle first. Michelle, what's the situation today?
So the situation in the world is we are confronted by and ruled by a fascist regime, right? And they are fighting very, very hard to implement their whole fascist agenda and consolidate their power, right? And, you know, as people, your listeners, I'm sure, are aware of from his campaign, Trump, how he was demonizing and going after immigrant people and making campaign promises and actually carrying them out in the past year and a half that he's been in power. And there has been, you know, since the first thing that he did coming into office was going after the Standing Rock, right? And the people that were standing out there to fight for the environment and then criminalizing dissent, and all the way down to now where the Kavanaugh hearings, where he's actually, you know, said that protests should be illegal. And this is all part of how they get rid of dissent and how they implement their fascist program. And, you know, as part of that, and also going after the rights of women, demonizing and criminalizing immigrants, continuing terrorizing of Black and brown people, the destruction of the environment. And so that's the situation right now that we're confronted by. And in the face of that, Refuse Fascism, since the beginning of this organization, we have been calling for stopping this fascist regime and getting out into the streets and organizing people around this demand, the Trump-Pence regime must go. And people, you know, Perry and I have been, you know, spokespeople for this organization. We are leading organizers in Refuse Fascism, and we've been out there in the streets calling for the removal of this regime.
Mm-hmm. Now, Perry, let's talk about this one from your standpoint. This arrest and prosecution really does seem to be an escalation of the criminalization of political protests in general. And it's a fairly big leap, it seems, in state repression. Can we talk about that a little?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, they had a year to file charges, and at the last minute, we all got these letters. And, yeah, they're coming down hard. I mean, it's the major crimes division of the LAPD, which is used to be the anti-terrorist group. I mean, it still is. And it turns out that they charged both Michelle and I, they charged all of us with various offenses of obstruction, resisting arrest, and so on. But they targeted Michelle and I, who are both spokespeople for the group, for conspiracy to commit a crime, which is kind of what they charge you with when that's supposed to be kind of worse than the crime. And it turns out that they actually had an informant in our group, and it seems that the charges came from that, which is totally illegal. We're a nonviolent political protest group, and the fact that they had a spy in our organization is, I mean, it's scary, it's ominous, it's offensive. They recorded a conversation without permission, which you need in California. And so, you know, this is clearly, this is to shut down dissent, and everything they're doing in terms of breaking up the charges into multiple different trials, setting the dates differently, dragging this out, it's clear that they're trying to, you know, pick us off, that they're trying to sort of see if they can kind of, these are tactics to just basically intimidate us, to create, get rid of trust. It's really awful. And I mean, clearly what we've been doing all along is just to raise the alarm about what is clearer and clear. It's been clear since Trump's inauguration, since his campaign, but it just gets clearer every day where this is headed and how bad it is and how much worse it can get. And we're trying to, you know, basically raise the alarm and let people know that there's another way, that the way to stop this is by people basically not sitting back and just accepting it and sitting at home watching their TVs. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we've got to get out there in the streets. We've got to do something about this because this is a nightmare and it's got to end.
Okay. Now, Michelle, let's jump into this because, you know, there's actually criminal conspiracy charges that you and Perry are facing. Right?
Yes.
And these are pretty heavy charges. This isn't like, you know, playtime. This is actually not that it ever is when you're going into their courtrooms and stuff, but it's not easy. It's not softballing, you know. It's sort of like there's actually a criminal conspiracy charges mean something very important. And also at the same time, and it's related to the importance of the actions that you guys actually took, which I think is actually important because you set a standard for some people, you know, that you don't have to sit back and accept this. And that's, unfortunately, that's a lot of what's happening right now is people either don't know what to do or they're thinking we can wait until the next election or we can do whatever, or it's going to burn out, or these people are morons, we're not going to, you know, they'll never last. But meanwhile, every brick is a brick of fascism that's building up a whole wall around things. So let's talk about this, the criminal conspiracy charges against the two of you.
Yeah, so Perry and I are facing conspiracy charges for basically, when it comes down to it, for leading Refuse Fascism. And it's crazy because I'm facing two counts of conspiracy and Perry's facing one charge of conspiracy. And on the second charge, they're saying that there's a co-conspirator that still remains unnamed. And so when you look at that and you think about people that are ready to come forward and step out and get out into the streets and call out this regime and organize to drive out this regime, it holds this over people's heads, right? Because anybody who even talks about getting out into the streets and plans a protest, they can go after you with conspiracy charges. And historically, conspiracy has actually been a charge used when they can't find any crime that you've actually committed. So they can hold this and they can just say whatever they want in the courtroom and just say that that you've committed a crime. And so and also historically, conspiracy has been a charge that they use against the leadership of organizations to go after leadership and to basically cut off the head. And when you look at exactly what you're saying, what the importance of these actions were in the face of everything that was happening, right? It's not illegal to shout fire in a crowded theater if there is a fire, you know, to use the analogy. And there is a fire. The world is on fire. They're destroying the environment. They're going after people. It's, you know, it's a danger and we have to step out and this is not actually going to stop us from, you know, organizing millions of people to get out into the streets, but we have to win this fight in the courtrooms and out in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me this, and both of you can speak to this, but Michelle, I'll ask you this first. I mean, one of the things, look, first off, it's, and I think it's already been pointed to that the filing these charges against you guys and against generally, it took almost a year to file these charges. I mean, we're going back on these cases to 2 years ago this stuff happened. And now it's, you know, and it was this sort of going, walking through it and pushing, steadily pushing on, never backing down, never saying anything, you know, on their part. And then there was never backing down on your part either. You, Perry, and all the members of Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club that actually has also been involved in this, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is important, though, is that when you're looking at this, you know, with you, Michelle, you were never arrested. You were never on the freeway.
Right.
and you're facing a massive charge, a very serious charge, and they've also put a second conspiracy charge against you. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, so that's right. I was not arrested. I was not on the freeway, but apparently they have all this evidence against me. And they went out of their way to find out who I was, where to find me, and to charge me. But then the crazy part about this is that in their police report, it does, as Perry said, they've admitted to have sent a confidential informant into our Refuse Fascism meetings and that illegally record like a private conversation, that now they're using that against us and to pile on these charges, and in particular the conspiracy charges. And yeah, this is... they're breaking their own rules, right? And this is how fascism work, right? This is the greasing the skids for fascism, right? And how they're actually breaking their own rules and going after people, you know, illegally spying, sending in their informants, you know, piling on these illegitimate bogus charges on people to intimidate people to back down from organizing to get out into the streets.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, too, that when you, and it just reminded me when you were talking about that, and you can speak to it, and I'd also like Perry to speak to it a little, too, because, you know, we're talking about how long it took them to file the charges, but they also, this point about how you are facing, you know, you're facing this even though you were never arrested, weren't on the freeway, but they also, this second conspiracy charge, which includes this charge against an unknown co-conspirator. So, in other words, there's like, how do you speak to that? I mean, what the hell's going on there? There's an unknown co-conspirator who's also liable for all this. Mm-hmm. And it's very dangerous if that is not taken up. Go ahead, Perry.
I mean, if this wasn't so, you know, so scary and ominous, it would be kind of laughable. I mean, this is the terrorist division of the LAPD, and they're spending our tax dollars to send an informant in to a peaceful political protest group to try to tar us as some kind of terrorist organization. It's mind-boggling. And the thing is that this is clearly politically motivated, and it's clearly, I mean, not to say that this isn't serious and, you know, scary, but it's also not well thought out at all. I mean, the city attorney in our arrest report mentions that you can charge someone with conspiracy as a felony or as a misdemeanor. Obviously, the felony is more serious, but the misdemeanor still carries a year in prison. And the city attorney states that he recognizes that there are First Amendment rights involved, and therefore they didn't charge us with felony conspiracy. If there are First Amendment rights involved, you can't get away with charging someone and say, okay, it's just a misdemeanor. That's just, it's nonsense. But that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michelle, you know, one of the things that I keep thinking about, too, is that, look, this is, we're talking here. We're not talking about just sort of like the, you know, the Andy Griffith. You know, I don't know, you probably don't, you're too young to know what Andy Griffith was, but he was the sort of the guy that worked in, you know, I can't even remember the name of the town, Mayberry, right? And he was the sheriff, and he would go down and he'd arrest the town drunk, and then everybody would be all happy and all this stuff. But you're actually talking about here, they're talking about criminal conspiracy charges. And they're talking about the involved in this is this point about the major crimes unit, the major crimes anti-terrorism division of the LAPD. This is a fairly heavy thing, you know. And when you're talking about the informants, I mean, informants, there's a long history of the role of informants here in L.A., you know, around the country as well, but especially here in L.A., and including Damian Garcia, who is a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party, was executed at the hands of someone working with the LAPD, you know, and it's an extremely important thing for people to recognize, is that this is not, for standing up against this and doing this, this is not something that, you know, they didn't just say, okay, we're going to slap you on the wrist, we're going to give you a fine.
Yeah.
These are fairly heavy things going.
Yeah, and one other thing to point out is, going back to what you said about how they had a year to file charges and they waited, there are charges being filed against members of Refuse Fascism in Chicago. This is it hints at that this is coordinated, and this might be, you know, they might have been waiting to kind of see what to do and got some directive from the federal level. But the fact is that this is, you know, it's hard not to see this as part and parcel of the way, like, local law enforcement and, you know, basically the anti-terrorist, the militarization of the police, where they're basically trying to, you know, carry out this kind of thing in urban areas, and to really just basically, like, kind of lump everything together, whether it's stuff that's clearly protected by First Amendment rights, and that in the present circumstances, it's just, you know, whatever we did as civil disobedience, to call that major crime, to get the terrorist division out, when this administration is carrying out, they're locking people up, they're starting, you know, they're on the verge of war all over the place, that they're just it's horrific what this administration is doing. Mm-hmm.
Perry, let me
go ahead.
No, we're running out of time, so I wanted to give Michelle a chance to speak to this as well. And I think it's right what you're saying. I mean, look, we are talking about what's happening here is not just a pimple on the, you know, butt of history. It's actually this is a huge thing that's going on in terms of the advances that are being made in terms of repression, in terms of, you know, going against people, stopping the kind of thing, and these consolidation of actually a fascist ruling structure. Michelle, go ahead and talk about what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of it is what people are talking about, like the criminalization of dissent and the fact that it, you know, when you think about what it means to consolidate fascism, dissent is like, you know, basically outlawed, right? And when you think about like some of these charges around UCLA and the fact that these are people that are organizing these students, right? And when you think about the role of students in this movement to stop fascism, it's a very important, you know, element of the whole thing. And the Nazification of campuses and the fact that UCLA actually was the first, basically greeted and brought in Steve Mnuchin, and then, you know, we rightfully protested him and we were brutalized and dragged out of the auditorium, and now they're piling on charges, right? But this is sending a message through society that if people get out into the streets and put something on the line, that this is what's going to happen to them, and that in the face of this, what people should do is just, you know, hide away and just see what happens. But in the face of this, we actually have to bring forward waves upon wave of people to not actually hide away, but to actually come out and stand with us, not just us, but like, you know, people that are rightfully, you know, standing up, and people from different perspectives, right? I'm part of the Revolution Club, and Perry is a Democrat, but we come together because we recognize this danger, right, of this fascist regime consolidating. And I just want to say one thing about the Revolution Club, right? There has been, we don't all know what this all has to do with them having the Revolution Club in their sights, but in LA in particular, people from the Revolution Club have actually been arrested for speaking at a public park and handing out, you know, the strategy for revolution, and at Art Walk for basically organizing people in the streets. And so we don't know what this all has to do with them going after the Revolution Club, but we actually, you know, again, in the face of that, we have to bring forward more people.
And we're running out of time, unfortunately, but I also want to say real quick, which is that that Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club have a lot of things on the boards in terms of, they have a lot of plans that are being made for what people can do in relation to this. We won't be able to get into all that now, but how do they get in touch with people?
They should call the Refuse Fascism office, which the number is 323-946-1742.
Say that again.
323-946-1742.
All right, Perry, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Great to be
here. Sure. Yeah, talk to you again soon, man. And Michelle, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay. And you should check my Facebook for all the contact information that Michelle was just talking about and upcoming things that are being done by Refuse Fascism and the Rev Club. Okay, so that'll be the Revolution Club. That'll be very interesting, very important for people to come out. Not just very interesting, very important for people to come out and stand with these people, because the way that they come in is to basically plow through and over people, and we cannot allow that to go on. This is a dire situation, folks. People need to stand up. All right, we're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with Sansara Taylor, so stay tuned.
This track is not an attack upon the American people. It's an attack upon the system within which they live. Since 1945, the United States has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments. In the process, the U.S. has caused the end of life for several million people and condemned many millions more to a life of agony and despair. The strength of your dreaming prevents you from reason. The American dream only makes sense if you're sleeping. It's just a cruel fantasy. Their politics took my voice away, but their music gave it back to me. The land where they're lumping are consumed by consumption, killing themselves to shovel down food in abundance. I guess a rapper from Britain is a rare voice. America is capitalism on steroids. Natives kept
in. All right, America is capitalism on steroids, right? Okay. That's abomination. Okay. All right, well, actually, the next guest is, I've been really anxious to get this person on the air, and I'm saying that around this in particular. We are currently facing an extremely grave situation. If you didn't know that already, you need to know, and you should question why you don't know. Okay, and that's a situation that's never existed before in this country, and it's growing and spreading rapidly. And there's the consolidation of outright fascist rule in the U.S. and all the horror that's going to mean here and around the world. And those of us who understand this and those who have some idea of extremely dangerous situation that the world faces because of this have a responsibility to humanity. And one person who is definitely out there standing up for humanity and pushing and fighting around this, against this, is Sansara Taylor. And Sansara Taylor she's well known on this station, on this show. She's a writer for RevCom.us, an advocate of the new communism developed by Bob Avakian, and an initiator of RefuseFascism.org. Sansara, welcome to the show.
Michael, I'm really happy to be with you. Thank you.
Sure. Let's jump into this because I don't want to waste a minute here. Okay, so you argue that fascism is rapidly setting into place and that it must be stopped. And one of the most dangerous developments on this front now is the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, and this must be stopped. What is it about Kavanaugh that makes it so necessary to stop him in particular?
Well, I think we have to pull back the lens. Everybody's focused on Kavanaugh right now, and appropriately so. And I want to say first is a point that we should come back to. A lot has been surfaced about sexual assault, the pervasive violence against women, the way that every woman in this world has a Me Too story, and this is a very critical question. And it has to do with the nature of the system we live under, and it has to do with why we need an actual revolution. So I want to bookmark that, even though it's not what you asked me. I just want to bookmark that up top, and let's come back to it. But on Kavanaugh, and this is something we have to pull back the lens and put in focus, because I fear this has been somewhat eclipsed by the way the hearings have unfolded. Kavanaugh is a fascist pig. He is somebody who has a proven record. Whatever proves to be true or not true about any individual allegation, of sexual assault, I want to come back to that. Kavanaugh has a proven record of decades acting as a hitman, a political hitman and a legal hitman for fascism. He was a key part of the Christian fascist-driven impeachment of Bill Clinton back in the 90s. He played a key role in arguing legally. He was a lawyer on the scene to stop the recount of the Florida ballots that ended up putting George W. Bush in office, the torture president, against, you know, despite the fact that he lost the popular election. This is part of what's been really a building and what you could almost call a rolling coup, slow motion over decades of fascism in this country, which now has reached the full halls of power in the Trump Pence regime. And Brett Kavanaugh is somebody who has proven his credentials as a hitman for Christian fascism and all around fascism, as a political operative and on the bench for 12 years, and has been handpicked by the fascist regime of Donald Trump and Mike Pence and the rest of them to sit on the Supreme Court and tip the balance to consolidate a fully pro-fascist Supreme Court, a majority pro-fascist Supreme Court, to rubber stamp and codify and lock in place everything about this Make America White Again, Donald Trump fascist program, the ethnic cleansing, the assault on immigrants, the deregulation of environmental protections, the stripping away of recently won rights of LGBTQ people. Brett Kavanaugh is somebody who speaks of a, quote, so-called separation of church and state. This is a man who ruled just last year to obstruct a 17-year-old migrant in detention from being able to access an abortion. He's somebody who would do violence to women's access to abortion and right to abortion across the board, either overturning Roe v. Wade or rendering it completely meaningless, but not stopping there, going after birth control. This is who this man is. This is who he's proven himself to be over decades. And this is why he's been picked for the courts, and this is why we saw on full display yesterday through those hearings his vengeful, fascist character out in full attack mode, and you saw the fascist Republican Party, which is what it is. It's been hollowed out. It is a fascist party of Donald Trump come out and go on the attack and double down. And they are in a very big power move right now to consolidate the final branch of the government that's not firmly in the hands of fascists, to consolidate a fascist Supreme Court as part of implementing a fascist regime in America, a fascist program, which has devastating consequences for the lives of billions of people on this planet. And this is a very dark day. It's a very dark day. The vote's about to happen, and this is extremely dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where we're sitting. And I guess I'll say one more thing before there's a lot. It's a complicated moment because we also saw yesterday, and this has to be spoken about as well, we have to fight this. We have to. People should be out in the streets demanding that this confirmation not go forward. Today there are protests and going forward, but the only way to stop this fascism, the only way it's going to be stopped, and you saw this on display as well, is through the masses of people standing up and saying, we will not accept this nightmare. We will not. It's illegitimate. It needs to be stopped, and the people need to stop it. You saw yesterday the Democrats, and frankly, the opposition too much allowed this to set the terms. They let this whole fascist program, this whole decades-long experience, all of Kavanaugh's role in torture, Kavanaugh's role in assailing the legal rights of women across the board, of LGBTQ people, all this got eclipsed. All this got eclipsed and buried underneath their pleads for an FBI investigation on an allegation of sexual assault. Now, allegations of sexual assault are very serious and should be looked into. It's very important. And that was tremendous courage that Dr. Ford displayed yesterday. But the narrowing of all the opposition to pleading for more time and erasing everything else that this man stands for, to call on the FBI, who is no friend of the people, to hinge stopping this nomination on that alone, it lets this whole program off the hook, and it demobilizes it. Even if you stopped him on those terms, people will be demobilized and disoriented to stop whoever is appointed behind him. And this is a moment when people need to be out in the fight of our lifetimes about the future direction of this whole country and the world. And that was, people were demobilized. Instead, people were demobilized by the Democrats. They were put on the defensive. They were rendered, they were fighting on narrow terms. And frankly, there was a dimension in which, as righteous as the fury is against sexual assault and as necessary as it is for the silence to be broken on this and for people to raise their voices against this, there was a dangerous dimension in which this is funneled into a culture that is going towards creating accusations as if they're the same as proof of guilt. And that is not a truth. That is not a good standard, and it is one that will end up harming the oppressed. And so there's real importance to pulling the lens back and refocusing on the full fascist program of Kavanaugh and of this regime that appointed him.
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit about that, the accusations you just brought up, because in the danger of this, I mean, it's really. In terms of the way it colored everything that was going on yesterday. And, you know, it went from really, there was just the America's sweet boy that was like coming through the week before that and all set to mount into new offices. And then you get this thing, this whole thing blows up, and there's a question of these accusations. And when you spoke to that, what were you talking about?
Dr. Ford came forward with an accusation of something that was done to her when she was very young, 15 years old. This is a very widespread phenomenon, sexual assault, rape, even the other allegations, gang rape at a party, drunken, taken advantage of, or violating, I hate that word, taking advantage of, violating women and girls who are unconscious, who are intimidated, all of that. This is pervasive in the culture. And I think that one of the things that's come out recently is how many women have stories like this. I mean, it's enormous. Everybody has a story like this, or they know people like this, or they've had to spend their lives guarding against becoming that woman who is violated in that way. I mean, this is pervasive. So this, people saw a woman demonstrating enormous courage, and a lot of people saw themselves in her, and that's important. But I will say it is very important, again, that we pull back the lens. And one of the arguments you saw Kamala Harris make actually is she kept saying, well, look, to refute the notion that this was a witch hunter railroad against Kavanaugh. She said, well, look, Gorsuch, we let him go. We didn't pick on him. We approved him. And we're going after you because of this allegation. Well, right there, how did Gorsuch become the standard of acceptability? Gorsuch is every bit as much of a fascist. This is demobilizing people. This is disorienting people. And it's very harmful because with Kavanaugh on the court or with somebody else on the court instead, we have to pull back the lens and fight against this entire fascist transformation of this country for the lives of women, for the lives of black people, for immigrants, for the people of the world, and for the planet itself, environmental destruction that we're on the verge of. That went out of focus by narrowing things to the accusation. And two, we don't know. Let's be real. I found Dr. Ford to be incredibly credible and moving and somebody who should be listened to, somebody whose claims should be looked into. But that's not the same as proof. And you don't know, and I don't know, and America doesn't know what really happened. And to choose to believe something because it corresponds to widespread phenomenon, a pattern, it doesn't prove that it's the case in any individual case. And to choose to believe something because it corresponds with what you've lived through or what makes you furious, even legitimately and righteously so, is also, it ends you up in a bad place. You don't get to choose what to believe. That's very harmful. You have to go on evidence-based. And throwing away innocent until proven guilty, it will harm. I mean, look, we live in a world with 2.3 million people in a country in prison, and innocent until proven guilty is an important criteria that we should not be cheering abolishing. And two, I think we have to look at that fury is a very powerful force, and it can be a very positive force, especially fury against sexual assault, patriarchy, degradation, the enslavement of half of humanity over centuries and generations who have been born female. In every country and every culture, that people should be furious, but fury is like a fire. I just wrote an article about this, about revenge or revolution. Fury is like a fire. It can be a force that can be harnessed for great good, to transform and great good, or it can be something that destroys everything. And I think a lot of women watching this testimony yesterday, and men with a heart too, men with a conscience, there was a lot of tears watching this. And there was a lot of tears of people looking at the horror and having it brought up for them, what women live through. There was a lot of tears and fear, and legitimately so, about what it will mean to have this kind of vengeful, patriarchal, raging fascism more fully consolidated, which you saw in full display in Kavanaugh's performance and Lindsey Graham and the ugly aggression of all of that. But the other thing that was missing, those are tears about what could be in a very negative sense. But one of the things that was, I think, missing is a sense of what else could be. What else could be if this fury is directed towards the institutions, the system behind this, and get into a world without sexual assault, without rape, without the demonization of immigrants, frankly, without borders, without the whole system that gave rise to this, which driving out the fascist regime has got to be part of, but going further than that. And if you want to end this, you can't let your fury blind you and tear down important principles of truth and morality. You can't be blinded by the thirst for revenge that lets these crimes go on and just says, I want somebody to pay. I want somebody else to pay for once. You have to be driven by and lift your sights to and fight for something else that could be, which is a world where this ends and does not go on and on. And to get there, you have to fight for the... You have to confront what's actually true and not make it up based on your convenience. And it matters a lot. It matters a lot. Kavanaugh is a fascist pig. There's no question about it. He has to be stopped. But we have to fight and stop him in a way that's consistent with getting to a world where everything that Kavanaugh concentrates is no more.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us, Revolution Newspaper, and a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism. What would that mean? Actually, that's really interesting, because fight it in a way that's consistent with that getting to that kind of world. I think it's important for people to understand what that would actually mean.
Well, right now, I think it means actually people seeing that as one major dimension, that these Democrats are not going to stop this. This midterms, everybody right now, oh, we're going to do the midterms, pleading for the FBI to do an investigation, saying we'll come to the the voting booth in the fall. You vote for these Democrats. They did nothing to stop this. They did nothing meaningful to stop this. And just like I was saying, they let his fascist agenda and the larger fascist program, which is why Kavanaugh was appointed, which is why Trump is president, which is what they're hammering into place over the heads of women, of LGBTQ people, of immigrants, of black people, of people of the world, letting all this off the hook and says, you know, well, get us in office, get us in office. Well, you're not going to stop fascism by voting for these Democrats. You're going to stop it by getting out in the streets. By getting out in the streets. And this is what RefuseFascism.org is about. And this is why it's really important. The previous guests you had on, Michelle and Perry, leaders of Refuse Fascism, who are under attack by the state precisely because this movement has a way to stop what this fascist regime is doing. And they want to undermine that. But people should, hey, anytime leaders like that are attacked, you should look into it and say, hey, what are they on to? Why is the state afraid of this? And what RefuseFascism.org is calling for and organizing for is for people who do not want to accept a fascist America, who do not want to live in a world of Muslim bans and 13,000 children in tent cities separated immigrants from their parents and caged. And that's just the beginning and worse to come. Who don't want to live in a world without the right to birth control and abortion, where women are slammed back and not believed, who don't want to live in a world that is concentrated by Trump, Pence, and Kavanaugh, to take it upon ourselves and mobilize to be in the streets, not for a day, and then go home and say, oh, please listen. They're not going to listen, but over and over again, growing, starting with thousands, getting in position where we can launch, starting with thousands in the cities across this country, and calling for millions. The millions who hate this and don't want to live this way to become a political force that changes the course of history, that becomes a political force that is so powerful and determined and unrelenting in the streets saying it's illegitimate. We will not accept this fascism. We will not go back and live our lives and go along like good Germans as this gets hammered into place. If we were to do that, you could have a situation where you compel those in power, not plead with them, but compel those in power who are not part of this fascist wing to use what is ample pigtails they could go after, ample technicalities and rules violations and illegitimacy and illegality that surrounds this Trump-Pence regime, any number of the scandals of which could be the mechanism through which they bring this regime down and oust it. But none of them will be used unless the people struggle from below. And in that struggle, women should unleash their fury towards that, and people who are furious about what women endure should be part of that, along with our outrage at what's being done to immigrants, to Muslims, to black people, to the planet, to dissent, to the truth, to morality. But we cannot join in tear down culture and any sense of revenge to get there. Mm-hmm. And then one other layer, to go even further, to fundamentally get rid of a world that gave rise to a Trump and Pence, the system that gave rise to both these fascists of the Trump-Pence regime and the Kavanaugh wing of it, but also these mainstream imperialists, which is what the Democrats are, these mainstream imperialists who have really done nothing to stop sexual assault. They've done nothing to stop the violence against women. They've done nothing to protect the rights of abortion across the country that is hanging by a thread already. They've done nothing to stop it and stop the Muslim ban. They've done nothing to stop any of this because they're fighting it, but they're fighting on the system's terms. Their bigger allegiance is to maintaining order for their system. We need to get rid of that system that gave rise to all of this that's going on, and that's the system of capitalism, imperialism, and that's making an actual revolution. That's what Bob Avakian has re-envisioned, the strategy and a new communism that is actually consistent with the world beyond all this, beyond all of this. And it's viable and it's real, and we have to be organizing for it and propagating that and helping people understand that a different world is possible. We don't have to decide and try to lash out and get vengeance within the world as it is, as the horrors grind on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was at a protest against Kavanaugh not long ago, and one of the spokespeople for the Women's March got out there and said, you know, well, we gotta cheer all our victories. And I thought to myself, what is she going to say? What were our great victories? It seems like things keep getting worse and worse. And she said, well, look, we were out there against the Muslim ban. We got to cheer what we did around childhood separation. We got to cheer what we did. And she went down the list, and every single one of the things she named has been locked in place and gotten worse. The Muslim ban is upheld. It's in effect. children, 13,000 immigrant children, child separation. There's more in cages. There's more in tents, and more of that is going on. And now parents who come forward or relatives who come forward to get them out of detention are being deported. It's gotten worse. But she's cheering this. And then she said, they've not gotten away with doing anything without having to hear from us. Well, that's not good enough.
Yeah, right.
We can't resign ourselves to this goes on, and they're going to hear from us as we lose. We have to lift our sights. We have to be serious about winning. And this is something Baba Bacon has fought for and taken responsibility for over decades, starting after the 60s when most people gave up. And he said, no, the horrors of this system continue. We still need a revolution. And I'm going to do the work to figure out how we can make that revolution and what we would do with state power where we could actually uproot and not turn, even unintentionally, even inadvertently, carry forward dimensions of what this system was and how it trained us to think and behave so that we replicate that in new form. And he's developed a new communism, and he's developed a strategy, and that's very serious. And people should avail themselves to that, take that responsibility with him, and lift our sights. And as you get into that, whether you're for revolution, whether you're not sure about that, wherever you're coming for, do not take the attitude that, well, we just have to live with fascism in power. No. We have a responsibility, and we have the power if we dare to access it, if we break out of the illusion that somebody else, somebody in the power structure, somebody who keeps selling us out and turning us down and spitting on our interests in the Democratic Party is going to do it for us. They are not. We have to do it ourselves. That's what refusefascism.org is about, and it's very urgent that people get involved in that, struggle with that, and we learn from each other as we dare to go out there and do what humanity needs from us, which is to drive this fascist regime out of power.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sansara, regrettably, we do have to move on, but I really want to have you back again to continue this conversation. It's really deep, really important, and it's important that people engage in it. So, all right,
Thank
Sansara,
you so much,
sure,
Michael.
And look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care. Bye.
Take care.
Right now, we are going to get our next guest in, filmmaker Robert Greene, to talk about his new film, Bisbee 17. Hey, man, how you doing?
Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I want to jump into this right away. I saw your film. I've watched it twice.
Okay.
I've basically told people, you've got to watch it, and they've watched it twice. And I wanted to talk to you about it. It's really an important film. Give people a synopsis of the film. What brought you to it, and what made you want to tell this story?
Well, so the film is about the Bisbee deportation, which 100 years ago, 1917, 1,200 striking miners, most of them immigrants, were rounded up at gunpoint by the sheriff, and who was backed by the mining companies in Bisbee, Arizona, which is a old copper town 7 miles from the Mexico border in Arizona. And they were rounded up, marched to the Warren ballpark, and put on cattle cars and shipped to the middle of the New Mexico desert and just left there. And so what we did in last year, for the 100th anniversary of the deportation, we We came to town and we recreated this with the locals. So it's a highly collaborative, film that mixes up Western and musical and ghost story elements to tell this, a story of this sort of lost history.
Mm-hmm. You know, if I wasn't petrified by rattlesnakes, I would go out there and just check the thing out based on seeing this. But I did.
There are rattlesnakes there.
Yes. I stay clear of rattlesnakes, other snakes as well, too. So you're telling a story, though, on at least two levels. I mean, there's a lot of levels that this thing get really, and that's one of the things I really admired, because there was so much that was like brought together in that. And, there's the story there's the story of today in Bisbee and what's actually going on. And that whole question, the whole idea of having this kind of celebration whatever, I don't know what you call it.
Commemoration. Yeah, sure.
Of what happened back then, 100 years ago or whatever, what happened then. And you have that at level, and you also, but then you're telling a story of today and a story of the past. And, it's like, and as you're saying, this was a very suppressed story. I mean, when people see that they're seeing that they're, when you watch that film, you realize you're seeing two stories, but they're actually really, they're tied together. You know, you can't separate one from the other. And I think it has an impact on the people watching it, but also it must have had an impact on the people in the film.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the 17 in Bisbee 17 is very much 2017. The film, of course, it takes cues from the historical story, but it's really about trying to understand it and trying to work through it. So the town was already doing this commemoration. Then we came in and dressed them up and restaged this thing. And what you see in the film is this working through process that you're talking about. So you see people trying to play a role. You see them working through trying to understand what, for example, Sue Ray, whose grandfather deported his own brother on July 12th, 1917, she enlists her sons to play the brothers deporting the other brother. And you see Sue Ray thinking through what it means to do this, and then you see the brothers thinking through what it means to do this. And so that keeps the whole film in the present tense. It's not a film that where you're supposed to, go back in the past. It's really about trying to understand. So that two levels thing that you're talking about is, I mean, there's a quote in the beginning of the movie where about towns that are haunted, mm-hmm. are both the past and the present at the same time. And I think that's very much what you feel in Bisbee and what we try to capture in the film.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and that's the point. I mean, look, it's also, you have this sort of, there's a way that this was covered up and just not, look, I never knew anything about it. I don't know how many people did know about it, but it was like, it was covered up. And in a way, you even get a sense that the truth about what happened in Bisbee is also covered up, even among the people who live there, because you could see people doing the research and saying, whoa, I didn't know that. Or, people dedicated to creating art around it. But still, there's a point where they begin to understand the full force of this. And I think that comes out particularly with the young Latino guy who is
Fernando.
Fernando, who is actually a very important character in the film and doesn't really say all that much, for a long time, but he's sort of like walking through and observing and absorbing, which is really, really, I think it was a really powerful way of bringing this out.
Well, Fernando's crucial to the film, and it was a buried history. I mean, it was buried history because it remains, the company town mentality remains, even though the mine shut down in 1975, there's still the people who stayed. The old divisions in town were the normal divisions of, the mine bosses and the workers, right? Mm-hmm. The new divisions in town are the mining families that remained in Bisbee after the mines closed because they loved the place so much. And new people who would move in, artists like Laurie McKenna, people like Fernando, who were born way after the mine shut down, who love this place for what it is. And then they find out this happened. And the mining families, many of them know what happened, but they don't talk about it partly because they were involved. They were involved in the Reyes family, story. It really tore their family apart. And people like Richard, who plays Sheriff Harry Wheeler in the reenactment, he had family members on both sides. People like Philip Estrada, his grandfather was deported. So it's certainly known, but it's almost like we don't talk about it because of how painful it was. And what we experienced was that because of the 100th anniversary, it was time to start talking about it. So even people like Fernando, who had sort of created the, he started out very apolitical. He basically saying, I'm not a political person. There's a bunch of fighting. He realized he needed to learn it too.
You know, it's interesting too, though, because one of the things that, I mean, people can't help but draw a lot of connections around this. And I think one was the fact that it had been hidden for so long, and then it bursts out in your film, and then you're watching the different reactions of normal people who have been, you know, their predecessors were actually involved in the actual thing that happened there. And in a way, that's this weird kind of, you know, like putting a blanket around what the truth was, mm-hmm. and then just living in this little zone where you can keep that story going. And it reminded me a lot of sort of somehow what you know, and I know there's people who've referred to, you know, what's happened to the indigenous people in this country and the slaughter of them, the, you know, all kinds of things that's happening. I mean, the round, you know, all kinds of things that have happened to people. And one of the things that I thought about was actually the way that the Nazis would come in Europe. And including them, because there's also the tie of the miners and stuff being from Eastern Europe. And, you know, you're looking at a different time, but you're looking at the way the Nazis came in, and they would actually, where they would just grab these people in the middle of the night, whatever, they'd stick a tag on them and put them in a bus, and they go off to the concentration camps and death. And the people who lived there acted like whatever was done was necessary. But boy, you know, I don't know what happened to the people who lived here, because, but I'm going to take the furniture because they don't seem to be here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, I mean, it just drew me right to this thing. I remember being a kid and reading the description of what happened when the Nazis took the Jewish people and other people and put them into camps, and people left everything there was. And then how the people reacted. And then later, because I thought this came out in your film too, is that later the people who were on the side of sort of like, well, nothing happened and we're just normal people and we did this, they actually had a stake in pretending that nothing really happened. And they could say, well, I didn't know that. And some of them were sincere. There was one guy I thought that was really troubled when he actually realized at the end what had
the
been done.
The level of what happened. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the most chilling lines is Dick Graham, who I love. I love this man. He worked himself from the bottom of the mining company to the top. He literally was the president of a mining company, and he defends the deportation. He articulately defends the deportation. We have him dress up as Walter Douglas, who was the chief sort of mastermind of the whole thing, and he works through what he calls the company perspective, and it's chilling to hear him talk about it. But the most important thing he says is how do you get 2,000 people to keep a secret? Mm. And we don't really answer how you get 2,000 people to keep a secret, because it should be in plain sight. The answer is because the Bisbee deportation was popular, because it had support. And that should be the most upsetting thing about the whole thing, exactly what you're talking about. I mean, one of the things that, you know, when you say cattle cars, when you show people being thrown onto cattle cars, you can't help but evoke these other moments in history that you're talking about, the Holocaust being, of course, the most prominent. But the fact that it's popular, and the fact that someone could be convinced that this is necessary, the law of necessity is evoked, this phony, very scary phrase that was evoked to retroactively defend what was done. This idea of a necessity, this idea that it's necessary sometimes to do bad things to people because you have to do the right thing. This is the mentality that justifies what's going on the border. This is the mentality that justifies all kinds of things. And I hope that the film gets you into that mentality and helps you understand that mentality a little bit better.
It definitely does, and it shakes the hell out of you. And if it doesn't shake the hell out of you, somebody better shake you. Right? That's the important thing. We have just a few more minutes left, and I wanted to actually get this in. One reviewer made a very important point. They said that it's not just a movie of the past, but a reanimation of it. And every important thing that this movie speaks to in the past is alive and thriving today. And I thought that was really important for people to understand, because when you go in that, you're not going to go in and just see a movie. You're going to see a film that is a really good film, and it's going to stay with you for a long time. But one of the reasons it's going to stay with you is because it's in your head, all the things that you've just seen, and you're sorting it out. And then there's a moment when I think, and I hope, a lot of people come to an understanding of, what the hell does this have to do with today? Because I'm really feeling it like this.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, the 17 is 100% 2017. The word deportation, issues around labor, these are issues and words that evoke the emotion because of what we're dealing with as a country right now. Arizona's a right-to-work state, for example. Bisbee's in a border town. They're building a wall right a few miles away. It's already got a wall. They're building it higher. And so what you see in the film is people trying to work through this moment. And they come together, actually. And what's so moving for us was that in the end, the coming together process was as important as the going at each other process. And that's what you see in the film. And I hope that has the resonance that it felt for us that day.
Hopefully they come together on a higher level though.
I think they did. I think their awareness was that there that day.
All right. I want to thank Robert. We're talking with Robert Greene. He's just a filmmaker with a fantastic film called Bisbee 17. And it's really, really, I think it's a really important film. People should get out there and see it. And then, you know, when you see it, talk about it. Talk about it and do all this. Because the other thing I kept thinking about is this. If we're looking at what's happening today, and I have a friend who's involved in finding bodies in the desert there. And because there's people who, you know, just dry up in the desert, and they're immigrants trying to come to find some way to stay alive, and their bodies are just left there, and you know, there's the horrors of the border patrol, and the fact that they find buckets of water that people put out for the immigrants, and they slash them so that the immigrants can't have anything to drink. And you think about the horrors of putting people through that, and that's actually part of what's spoken to in your film, and it's part of what you've been, I think, trying to make a point again about fighting against. So I wanted to thank you very much for doing that.
Well, thank you so much. Sure. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, definitely, man. And I really, again, I want to make sure that you know this. It's the filmmaker is Robert Greene. His film is Bisbee 17. I want to thank all of you for listening to us today, for joining us today. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson. I want to thank my board up for today, Gary Baca. I want to thank Jeff Pryor, wherever he is. Okay, Jeff, good to see you again, man. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@ MichaelSlateShow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. And get your butts over to see this film. Don't let it go by, and then force other people to go see it, because it's going to open your eyes like crazy, right? And you're going to really come out of it feeling something, knowing something, and hopefully committed to actually not settling for this fascistic pig hole we live in right now, all right? So that's it. I'll talk to you again next week.
Fingers at you. I know what you did and I know what you do. Flipping that news got the people confused. Abusing all the rhythm, leaving us the damn blues. Wicked while you're winning while the rest of us lose. Nobody knowing just who the f*** who. So I identify you. Those who know who. Pushing all the buttons, pulling all the levels. You know who it is, it's a so-called devil. Beyond what you see, and now another level. D's of evil, pick hole, axe, shovel. Get to picking while they politicking. Known all alone in a room like Quicken. Expose who they are and what they do. Those who know.